This is an ABC podcast.
This is the Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Good afternoon. My name is Annie Brown and welcome to the Victorian Country Hour on this Friday afternoon. I'm outside. I got out of the studio and I'm up here in Stanley in the northeast of Victoria, broadcasting from Highgrove Berry Farm. And I'm not the only one here. There are hundreds of people, a big line of cars up the driveway and plenty of people with broad-brim hats and buckets looking for tons and tons of berries. I'm looking out and I can see all the rows of raspberries, blueberry hill up behind me, blackberries, boysenberries, any kind of berry and cherries that you can think of. And we're going to do a bit of a wrap around Stanley today because it's a bit of a horticultural haven up here in the northeast, and especially at this time of year. It's a small town of only about 300 or 400 people, I think, normally. And this time of year, you just have hundreds and hundreds of people coming up here, all trying to get their hands on some fresh fruit. So we'll check in with a few farmers around the area because there's also lots of new things going in as well, including a new wine grape vineyard as well. I'll tell you all about that today. But let's kick things off here at Highgrove to sort of give us a bit of an introduction. If you're not too familiar with Stanley and the berry farm up here, we're joined by Tony Iria, who's the manager and the owner. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us here. It's booming. There's tons of... How many people would you get here every day?
Oh, look, this time of year, we get at least 400 plus per day. Holiday people, school holidays, it's all happening. And we've got magnificent berries. I've been here 19 years, and I believe this is one of the best years we are experiencing. Due to the cool weather we've had, berries thrive with cool weather. Of course, we need warm weather for them to ripen up. But yeah, it's everything's looking so great. I'm so so proud to be part of it.
300 to 400 people a day, that is a lot of people coming through your gates on the farm here. And I've also seen a lot of dogs. It's everyone and their dog, as they say.
Yeah, we are dog friendly, only if they're on a leash. And everyone knows that, and they bring them on a leash, and we got no problems with that. They look after them, and they cause no problems at all.
So tell us a bit about the season, because we've spoken to a few fruit growers around the area, and it's been a bit of a different one, hasn't it? It's been a bit later than usual.
It certainly has. We 2 weeks later than last year, but it's worked in our favour, because like I said, berries like cool weather, and we've had a lot of that cool weather, and the plants are really thriving, loaded with fruit and beautiful sweet berries and cherries also.
Talk us through your orchard as well. How many rows of berries do you have in here?
We got 100 rows of berries of all different sizes, varieties from raspberry to blueberries, boysenberries, waldoberry, tayberry, brambleberry.
There's a few there I've never heard of before. Waldoberry, tayberry, what are they?
A tayberry is a new berry the last few years. That's a cross between a blackberry and a raspberry, and it's got a beautiful taste about them, different to any other berry.
Wow, there you
yes,
go.
Yes.
But what's the most popular berry? Is it blueberry, raspberry?
The most popular is definitely the raspberry, followed by blueberries and boysenberries. Yeah, of course, there's people that pick a little bit of each variety, but mainly raspberries, blueberries and boysenberries are the most popular. Mm. Yes.
I wanted to talk to you a bit about the berry demand, because it's really booming, isn't it? Like, I think the stats I've read are around horticulture this morning, that we're eating nearly twice as many blueberries in, like, the last 10 years. It's really gone gangbusters.
It certainly has. When I came here 19 years ago, there was only 2 rows of blueberries. Since then, now there's probably 20 rows, and the demand every year is getting bigger and bigger and bigger for blueberries.
What's driving that? Like, what's going on with blueberries?
I think with blueberries, it's what people hear, that they're so healthy for you and antioxidant, and a lot of people pick them, and they've got blueberries all year round. They take them home and they freeze them, and they've got blueberries all year round, and they're much better picking them fresh rather than buying them out of supermarkets.
And I think kids as well, right? Like, I know so many kids who just love blueberries.
Absolutely. Kids here have a ball. They just can't wait to get in there, and they have a bit of a nibble, different varieties, and they just love. You can see their face when they come out. They got a grin from ear to ear. They love coming up here. Yes.
There's a few of them hovering around looking at us a bit curiously. What's happening? What is the ABC radio doing?
Well, they probably, this is the first time, and I'm honoured to have ABC on the Country Hour. First time I've experienced it, and of course people, when they go past, they're a little bit curious, thinking what is going on. But yeah, everything is going on as normal. Yes.
And it's great to be out here as well. It's not too hot either. I did check the temperature. It's about 21 degrees, although if you're standing in the sun picking berries, it probably feels a bit hotter than that.
It certainly is. Some days we probably 8 to 10 degrees lower than Albury, Wodonga or Wangaratta. So yeah, it's always cooler here, and it's very pleasant, and we got a beautiful deck. We cater for everything. People pick their berries, they come through, and then they go and sit on the deck and they indulge in our beautiful ice cream and other goodies in their kiosk.
You're listening to the Victorian Country Hour. I'm broadcasting live from Highgrove Berry Farm in Stanley in the northeast. I'm joined by Tony, he's the owner up here, who's been working flat out. Berries have got a short window, don't they? So for the month of January, really, you're just running on the smell of an oily rag, right?
Well, they certainly have got a short season. We start about mid-December, and by the end of January, they're almost over. So, yeah, it's a six-week window where you can pick berries.
Very intensive farming. And how much work goes into these during the year? I mean, so you've got this few months where it's intense to come out and pick them and get the fruit, but what happens for the rest of the year?
Yeah, when the crop is finished, there's a lot of work between when it's finished picking and they start picking, fruit pruning, training canes for next year's crop, because berries don't fruit on the same cane. So we've got to start looking after next year's crop, which is the new canes that are there now.
Hmm.
Yes.
And also, we were chatting earlier, berries aren't the only thing you grow here. You also do a lot of chestnuts.
Yeah, we have got a lot of chestnuts. We produce approximately 200 tonne of chestnuts, all easy peel chestnuts. Anyone that knows about chestnuts, they would know what easy peel is. Yes, and we pick them and store them in the cool room, and we send them to agents as they request them from Perth, Adelaide, Sydney, Melbourne.
What's the demand like for chestnuts? I've seen a few people growing chestnuts around here.
This is the right area for chestnuts, one of the best areas for chestnuts because it's cooler. Chestnuts, it's like any farming produce. Some years you have better years than others. When we experience very early years, we experience some rot in chestnuts, and by experiencing rot, we get paid a lot less than if there was no rot involved. But this year, we anticipate there will be no rot, so all you chestnut lovers, get into them this year, there'll be no rot in chestnuts.
Well, that's good to hear. Is it the rain, like heavy rain, that sort of induces the rot? Conditions?
It's early seasons. The earlier the season, the more rot we experience. This year's a late start season, so we anticipate there'll be no rot in chestnuts.
Very good.
Yes.
Well, Tony, I should let you get back to the kiosk because you've been inundated by kids in buckets.
We certainly have, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak on the Country Hour, and have a happy new year, whoever is listening.
We might check in with you back at the end, see if we can wrap up the show, but we'll drag you back over here.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tony. Okay. That's Tony Iria. He is the owner and manager here at Highgrove Berry Farm. You're listening to the Victorian Country Hour. I've got a couple of pickers with me as well. Hi, ladies. Tell us who you are and where you're from.
I'm Sue. I'm from near Howlong.
And I'm Izzy, I'm Sue's daughter.
So also from near Howlong?
Yes, yep, that's right.
What's in your buckets? What have you been picking?
Raspberries.
Raspberries, we're going to make some jam.
Just raspberries? Is that what you've sort of come in?
That's our second trip in, so we had a bucket of loganberries as well, and some more raspberries.
We just pick what's ripe.
Do you often come up here to Stanley to pick berries?
Yep. It's just so good to come up here, like... You will never get nicer berries than this. This is it.
It's a very unique climate up here too, you know. It's not not many places in Australia that are a bit like Stanley's climate, you know, and water, I guess, as well. And it's just, I think it probably goes back to your primal instincts, picking.
It's also a great summer activity too, right?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely, yeah. It's good fun, good family fun. Like, the kids are out here having a ball and it's a great way to get out. Yeah.
I remember coming here as a kid and, you know, walking down these rows and just stuffing my face full of berries, and that was, just the best thing ever. Mm. Yeah.
No. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? You've got it. I remember you had to get a eating pass or a picking pass, because if you're just coming to eat, you could eat your weight in berries.
Yeah, it's really good.
Now I have the self-control to just put them in the bucket and eat them later.
So you're going to make some jam with these raspberries?
Yes. Yeah, and they're sun-ripened too, which is something, you know.
It's a better flavour.
Yeah, I think a lot of the supermarket ones can sometimes be, over the year, they'll probably be hydroponic, you know. So these ones are out in the sun and they got the sun flavour.
Well, I also want to ask you guys, it's a bit of a test of some of the research stats we find, but I've been reading that we eat a lot more berries, we've almost doubled our consumption of berries as a nation in the last 10 years. Do you think that rings true? Do you think we eat more berries than we used to?
No, that's a tough one.
Maybe that's just a lot of health conscious people, and berries are very accessible. You know, they can be put in smoothies and kids love them, so maybe that's true. I don't know.
They're also easy to eat. Like, you don't have to peel them or cut them up or anything. You just buy them and shove them in your gob.
Well, thank you so much, ladies, for stopping and having a chat. Good luck with your jam. The raspberries look great. Yeah, and thanks for talking to us on The Country Hour.
Thank you so much for chatting to us.
Bye. Couple of berry pickers there showing us what's in their bucket. We've got plenty of people walking past. I think lots of families are trying to get the kids out of the house this afternoon up here in Stanley and get some berries going. See one kid lying down on the ground. I think he's had enough. Maybe he needs to go get some shade and some ice cream. You're listening to the Victorian Country Hour. My name's Annie Brown. I'm up here in Stanley at Highgrove Berry Farm with hundreds of other people this afternoon, looking across all the rows of delicious berries. But this isn't the only farm up here in Stanley. There's plenty of other fruit orchards and different kind of growers. It's a bit of a horticultural haven. And from berries to cherries now, let's head to one of the oldest running orchards in the area. I dropped in at Europa Gully Orchards on my way up here this morning and had a quick chat with Peter Shamron.
I'm probably the third generation that owns this property, the Shamron Farm. My grandfather was a miner and my father was an orchardist. I took the orchard over when I was 16, I'm now 78, but in the meantime I had other employment. So we're probably the longest continuous farmers in the area. Now we're growing cherries, apples and chestnuts. Sorry about that noise, our gas gun going off scared the birds, they're a true enemy. This year our cherry crop is just abundant because ideal conditions during pollination time, we had fine weather. And the weather's been kind to us as far as rains, no cracking. But unfortunately, because we haven't had the hot weather, our cherries didn't ripen up, and our main sales are before Christmas. But unfortunately, we only had 2 days of sales before Christmas. Now we have tons of cherries here that we are a bit concerned about. A similar thing happened 2 years ago. Same problem. We left 10 tonnes of cherries on the tree to rot.
Wow, 10 tonne.
10 tonne we estimated, and probably we're looking at 5 or 6 tonne this year that will rot on the trees, because we rely on Picayune. Mm. We don't supply the supermarkets. The simple reason we don't supply the supermarkets, we're not set up for grading. Supermarkets insist on cherries being a bit bigger, which we don't put a chemical on to make them bigger. And the cherries in the supermarket are dipped in chlorine to make them look fresh. The first thing that deteriorates on a cherry is the stem will dry, so they're actually dipped in chlorine to make the stem look green. Mm. So ours are fresh, no pesticides on our cherries, but we do use fungicides.
So, like you're saying there, a bit about the season this year, it's been quite cold and quite late to heat up and really get the sugars and the colours going in the cherry. So it wasn't really until a few days before Christmas. What happens after Christmas? Does the demand for cherries just drop off?
Well, I've always said once New Year's Day comes, no one wants cherries.
Really?
It's a Christmas thing. It's a tourist thing, and after New Year's Day, we just will not get people here. You know, our prices are down as low as you can possibly get. They're $8 a kilo. We don't charge entry fees, so people can come in and enjoy themselves and eat and buy the cherries, fresh picked cherries.
And we're looking out at your cherry trees at the moment. You can see all the little red cherries just sort of glistening in the sun. Yeah, you can just see how many there are.
It's a big crop. It's a huge crop. Probably a bit smaller than we would like them to be, but I think that's just because of the massive crop. Our fertilising program didn't take place during the year for other reasons. So it's just a big crop. And normal year we'd have a certain amount of drop. This year we didn't. The pollination was just absolutely perfect for because the bees were able to work when we're out in blossom. So it's just a massive set. And none of them dropped because they're ideal conditions, except towards the finish, December, we never had that heat to ripen them up and finish them up. The sugar content is perfect in them. They're really sweet, even though some haven't got a lot of colour. The sugar content is fantastic.
Peter, what else do you grow out here looking around? You've also got some apple trees. You've got Christmas trees, does it look like?
Yeah, we had a good year with our Christmas trees. We grow a different variety of Christmas trees. The ones you buy in the shop are, we call radiatas. Ours are the Douglas firs or Oregons, whatever you like to call. So people, that's been successful and that's got us through to Christmas. So we sell those for $50, doesn't matter what size they are, just $50. I couldn't be bothered measuring them. And then later on we'll open up for pick your own apples. Over the years we've been $2.50. Then we have our own pick your own chestnuts. And last year we put sunflowers in and that was very successful, which we've also done this year for people to come and pick their own flowers. So we sort of haven't got all our eggs in the one basket. If we fail on the cherries, we hope to pick up on something else. So it's about 3,000 fruit trees here to look after.
So an eclectic mix, really, you've got going on. It's different crops, yeah.
Different crops, yeah. We grow a few plums, which we'll just do the markets with those, the farmers market in Wodonga. Later on, it's a big crop of those. So, as I said, it's been ideal for pollination this year. Everything was going right for us. And we haven't had to use many fungicides. We just haven't had that humid weather. So it's all good.
I want to talk to you about growing fruit in Stanley. So Europa Gully Orchard, you come down Dirt Road onto Shamron Road, so your family's...
Why are we called Europa Gully Orchard? Because this is a mining area and the little valley we're in here was called Europa Gully. Like in the gold mining days, they named different areas like Milkman's Flat, Poverty Gully, all that. So we named it Europa Gully because... My grandfather was a miner and he died of miner's disease, which we would call emphysema now. Mm. And on his death certificate said Alphonse Chambéron of Europa Gully. So that's why we have called the property Europa Gully, just to keep that little bit of history going. And it's well known and I think it's important. Like it's another farm here they call Hillsborough, which was a township here, Hillsborough Nuts. So I think it's important we keep that history alive.
And as we come down to your farm down here, so we're kind of on the edge of the pine plantations. Yeah. Fletcher's Dam is just through, not too far away, stone's throw away.
Yeah. And we're on the main road to they call it the Magic Forest, where the American redwoods are. So we're down that way. Yeah.
Where the fairies live.
Where the fairies live. Yeah.
So how long have your family been farming here for?
We estimate probably 140 years it's been on the family farm. As I said, my grandfather was a miner, then my father put orchards in and I took the orchard over when I was 16 and then bulldozed all out and when I was 22 and went working for the Country Fire Authority for 33 years. And in 2000 I decided I'd put orchard back in. But in that period of time before we put the orchard back, we actually put we had plantation here, pine plantation, and we cleared it all. And a lot of people say we'll never grow fruit where it's been pine plantation, but we proved them wrong.
Yeah, it looks like it's worked out all right.
Yeah. It's an old gentleman here, he's actually 98, Bill Cook, and when he heard I was going to put orchard in, he said, "You'll never grow apples or cherries where it's been pines." And And now I quite often remind him, Bill, thank God I had pines. What would the trees be like if I hadn't have planted pines?
Well, you're listening to the Victorian Country Hour. My name's Annie Brown. I'm here at Europa Gully Orchards with Peter Shamron talking about growing fruit in Stanley. Peter, Stanley's kind of, it's known for its apples, really, isn't it?
It is, and it's in the Indigo Shire, probably going back a little bit for growing, in the Indigo Shire, which takes in the wine industry at Rutherglen, Glen, it takes in the Keewaw Valley, which is dairy and beef. This is the richest soil. It's no topsoil here. It's the same all the way down. It's very rich soil. Our rainfall in the old measurements are around about 48 inches. We are down a little bit this year, so it's ideal. We don't have to, I don't irrigate here. We've got no water. You cannot build dams here unless they're spring fed, because you cannot get a bottom to make a dam in a gully or whatever. So it is very rich soil, and it's well known for the growing apples. It was around about 2,000 acres years ago, and that was pre-70. But because of we lost our export market to England in the 68, 69, people started to push their orchards out. So it is very rich country. I think it was... A count was about 47 growers here at one stage. Now we're back to about 7 people, I think, that is actually making full time.
Wow.
The rest is just hobby farms. So. Yeah.
And so less apples. We were talking earlier about all the things that are grown here. A lot more chestnuts than
chestnuts, and believe it or not, it's vineyards going in. We've got some really good farmers in the Powells, the Thompsons, the Cooks, that are really committed to farming. It's important we do keep the farming, but typical everywhere, because we're farming, we have people move in and they don't like what we're doing. You heard the gas gun go earlier. We've actually had 69 visits here, police, EPA, council over our bird scaring device, because people have complained about it, and the same everywhere.
Yeah.
But that's every farming community, whether the cows are... dropping stuff on the sides of roads or whatever.
Yeah. So what's the next few months look like for you? Are you getting ready for apples?
Yeah, the apple crop's a bit down because it was a big crop last year. But, yeah, we're ready for the apples, and that's probably March. And then the chestnuts probably in April. As I said, the gas gun's going. Birds are our problem. We've tried several things this year. We've got a laser system going in. Some of the growers, one of the growers, Thompson's, put a drone in, which flies their orchard and scares the bird. I've also put a drone in, but not as sophisticated as theirs. So
it scares the birds, it just flies up
and
down.
We put the drone up and just flies the whole orchard, and the birds don't like it.
Oh.
So that's very successful. The other grower's spent a lot of money. His drone actually comes out of a box, flies the orchard, comes back, settles in the box itself, recharges, and then when it's charged, it flies the orchard again. It's fantastic.
Did you ever think you'd see flying drones scaring birds?
No, we've put... Brendan's put his in, and he's pretty happy with it. He's an automatic. Mine, I have to... it's programmed to fly the orchard, so I have to manually
fly
it up. And but unfortunately, we've got a hawk here. He doesn't like it, so... I have to watch the screen because he's going to have a go at it. So as soon as the hawk appears, I press home on the drone box, you know, the controls, and the drone comes home.
Modern farming.
Modern farming. It's good. You can see the birds actually heading out of the orchard. It's really...
effective.
It's effective, yeah.
Well, Peter, thanks for having a chat with us this afternoon, and all the best for the rest of your season, new year.
And hope to see you. Some people come up here and enjoy Stanley, the berry farm, and just the attractions we've got.
That's Peter Shamron from Europa Gully Orchards there, having a chat with me earlier today about the cherry season out there. It came a bit later, and now Christmas is gone, the sort of demand in Watford cherries has dropped off a little bit, so they might have a big crop left over there. You're listening to the Victorian Country Hour. My name's Annie Brown. I'm up here in Stanley in the northeast of Victoria, broadcasting live from a berry farm this Friday afternoon, and it's lovely. I'm perched under a shady cherry tree, and we've got hundreds of people walking past with buckets of raspberries, blueberries, also some pretty good looking cherries as well out here as that we've been looking at, and plenty of dogs. It was just a lovely German shorthaired pointer sitting under the tree here with us in the shade for a few minutes there, just getting out of the sun. It is 12:30. It's time to find out what is making rural news, and it's a good afternoon to Emma Field.
G'day, Annie. The Federal Agriculture Minister has defended her government's trade record after China revealed they'll impose a 55% tariff on beef imports once they reach a quota level. The move to protect Chinese producers was announced yesterday and will impact a number of countries, including Australia, Brazil and Argentina. The safeguard mechanism will kick in once Australian beef exports hit 2.7 million tonnes this year, which is less than the beef exported from Australia to China last year. Agriculture Minister Julie Collins says they're seriously concerned about the way China is applying their safeguard mechanism.
Yeah, well, this is a global safeguard mechanism. We have been engaging together with industry, with Chinese officials, government and Chinese industry now for around a year in relation to how they would apply the safeguard measure. But it will impact our industry because, of course, what was occurring was because of the good work of our government, a lot of the restrictions that were on our exports to China had been started to be lifted. And what has occurred is the way it's been averaged over 3 years is in the last 12 months, of course, our exports to China in terms of premium beef were increasing substantially. So what they've done is for all of their importers, they've done an average, and that what they've done is they've said, this is your average of what you're allowed to send into China, and then over that there will be a tariff applied. We do have some serious concerns about the way it's applying, but we have not been singled out.
Let's go to Stansbury on South Australia's York Peninsula, where for almost 8 months, oyster growers in that region have not been able to harvest or sell a single oyster. The region was one of the first parts of the state to close in May last year when high levels of brevitoxins were detected linked to harmful algae bloom. But on New Year's Eve, Stansbury growers received the long-awaited news from authorities, which gave them the all-clear to reopen. Oyster grower Paul Dee says it was the best news he could get coming into the new year.
When the news came through, yeah, I was just a bit exhausted and a little bit overwhelmed, I have to say. So on Monday, it'll be 8 months. So definitely a sense of relief. It's also a reminder of why our South Australian Shellfish Quality Assurance Program is so important, because I think that the oysters picking up on everything that the ocean has, and our monitoring program picks up on all of that. So there's going to be other hurdles that we'll encounter. So for us oyster growers around South Australia, this isn't something that we're not new to. We sort of understand what's happening in the ocean, and we believe in the science, and we want to protect our water quality program at all costs, because we heavily rely on it to make sure our oysters are safe for human consumption.
Western Australia's permanent ban on commercial demersal fishing from Augusta to Kibari came into effect on January the 1st in a move the WA government say will help protect several species of fish. Fisherman Nicholas Soulos says his licence is now cancelled with about 1 month's notice. He's got no idea what he and his crew will do.
Our licence is going to be permanently cancelled. It'll be at least 7 months before we see any form of financial assistance or compensation. And even that looks very grim given the amount that they've budgeted for. I don't know where we go. I've lived and breathed this fishery for over 55 years. The skipper, who's been skipper in the boat now for 30-odd years, he lives and breathes it. The two crew that we have, they came to us as teenagers. They're now in their early 50s. It's the only occupation they know. It's the only skill they know. But this has completely blindsided everyone. They have not come and spoken to us before the announcement or since the announcement. I asked for some emergency funding for the skipper and crews of the boat, and the government's not coming to the party with any of that.
And Annie, shucking oysters is a skill, and after serving thousands of them over the past few days, it's one Bruny Island oyster farmer, Sian Mile, has well and truly honed. Her family business made its debut at the Taste of Summer Festival this year in Tasmania, with a range of relatives roped in to lend a hand. She describes her business as a slow farming operation and says there's been a lot of oyster shucking in preparation for the festival.
I think we're at about 800 dozen oysters, so it's a big job shucking oysters, and logistically getting them out of the water from the farm to the plate is a logistical task, because obviously we're tidal, so we don't go out in a boat. We have to wait for the tides. We're slow farming, and that's when we go out. So sometimes we're out there under the cover of darkness harvesting, and then we need obviously to get them into a cool room and then shucked into the punters here at the Taste.
And that wraps up Rural News.
Shucks. Love that word, shucking oysters. Thank you for that. That's Emma Phil bringing us the latest in Rural News. Let's head to the Bureau of Meteorology now and find out what is happening with the weather outside. We're joined this afternoon by Senior Forecaster Simon Timkey. Good afternoon, Simon.
Hi there, Annie.
I'm up here in Stanley in the northeast, Simon, on a berry farm. I don't know if you can hear the berries. I don't know.
I can't hear any berries, no, but I wish I was there with you, Annie, because that sounds great. Looks like a beautiful day up there today.
Well, it looks like quite a sunny day across the state, really.
That's exactly right. Looking at the satellite picture at the moment, we've got a little bit of cloud along the surf coast and maybe just a little bit about the southwest coastal, so a little bit of cloud over the far east of East Gippsland. But other than that, mostly clear skies, so plenty of sunshine across Victoria today. The temperatures, looking at the temperatures at the moment, sort of very high 20s to very low 30s across the north of the state, a little bit cooler further south and east, where we're sort of seeing temperatures in around the low to mid-20s at the moment. But certainly, if you like a bit of sunshine, today is a good day. Not expecting much in the way of weather with all that sunshine, although I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we saw a little bit of cloud develop about the eastern ranges during the afternoon. We might see a spot or two, a very isolated light shower, but unlikely to receive any sort of noteworthy rainfall today. The winds today, not too strong. Generally southeast to northeasterly in direction, I reckon, and we'll see them tend around a little bit more south to southeasterly in the west. We might see those winds freshen up a little bit near the Gippsland coast too. We do have a strong wind warning out for the Gippsland coast for this afternoon, and again for tomorrow afternoon as well. So windier conditions near the Gippsland coast, but less so over the rest of the state. The next couple of days are a little bit more interesting, though. We're under the influence of a high-pressure ridge today, but that ridge will contract southwards, and we'll see a trough extend over the western districts of Victoria later on today. And then that trough will move slowly eastwards across the state across the weekend. So we'll see a little bit of weather develop with that. So cloud increasing during Saturday. We'll see some isolated showers and thunderstorms develop during the afternoon and early evening. Probably most likely over the eastern districts, and more frequent over the eastern districts and about the Great Divide there. But I think any district tomorrow is the chance of seeing a shower or possibly a rumble of thunder and a flash of lightning during the afternoon and early evening. Conditions a bit warmer tomorrow. We'll see maximum temperatures generally above average, although it will be a little bit cooler in the far southwest of the state. And the reason for those warmer conditions is the northerly winds ahead of that trough, dragging a bit of warmer air down from the north. But the trough will bring a southerly or south to southwesterly change with it, so we'll see that move across western and central districts during Saturday. And then continue to move eastwards during Sunday. So we'll still see a bit of weather around the place during Sunday. Some isolated showers about and south of the ranges during the morning, but they'll become a little bit more widespread and frequent about central and eastern districts during the afternoon. So some showers and possible thunderstorms about central and eastern districts, particularly during the afternoon and early evening on Sunday. Could be a bit of morning fog around the place during Gippsland too, I think, on Sunday. Conditions generally mild to warm. Temperatures probably a little bit lower than on Saturday, and the winds generally southerly coming in behind that trough. On Monday, we'll see that weather continue to move eastwards and become mostly confined to eastern districts, but anywhere sort of east of about the Dandenongs would be a chance of seeing a shower. Chance of an afternoon thunderstorm about the northeast and east Gippsland districts. And conditions, as far as the temperatures go, pretty similar to Sunday. Maximum temperatures about average in the north, but a little bit less than that in the south, and the winds persisting from the south, stopping it from getting too warm. On Tuesday, I think should be pretty much dry across the state. There might be the odd fog patch around in the south with southerly winds, but through the middle to later part of next week, we will see temperatures starting to rise. Looks like it's going to get pretty hot mid to late next week as that next high pressure system moves out over the Tasman and we start to see the winds turn around northerly. So Wednesday and Thursday in particular looking pretty hot. We'll start to see some temperatures across the north of the state get into the 40s, I think, and at least sort of mid to high 30s across the south. So some hot conditions on the way for mid to late next week, Annie.
Very hot, sounds like, next week. We'll keep abroad that. Simon, anything else we need to know today?
No, I think we've pretty well covered everything. Thanks, Annie.
No problem. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you. Enjoy your berry picking.
Thank you. It's been a very, very good day. That is Simon Timke. Oh, I had to put it in there. He's the senior forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, taking us through the forecast for today and into next week. My name is Annie Brown. You're listening to the Victorian Country Hour. I am up here in Stanley, broadcasting live from a berry farm. I'm perched under a shady cherry tree. And there's also a whole bunch of children, young people, kids, and mum. He's come over to sort of get some reprieve from the sun. Hi guys, tell us who you are and where you're from.
I'm Simone from Aubrey, and
I'm Sophia. Ruby.
I'm Emmy.
Say Nicola.
And Nicola.
And Nicola's a little shy. Well, what brings you guys up here? Berry picking, obviously, but how's it been?
It's been good. Have the berries been good, Soph?
Yes. Yes.
I can see you've got a lovely bit of berry on your face. What have you been eating?
Berries.
Which ones, though?
Raspberries? Blueberries?
Which ones?
Boysenberries? Which one's your favourite?
Raspberries.
Raspberries.
Oh, delicious. And do you come up here every year?
This is our first time, but my sister comes up every year.
Nice. And it's been a good day out, guys?
Yes.
Oh, lovely. And what's your favourite berry? Go on.
Mommy, make
too many
blackberries.
To choose.
Blackberries.
That's a good choice.
Thanks, guys. Have a great rest of your afternoon and have fun summer holidays, yeah?
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Some of the kids here at the Highgrove Berry Farm this afternoon broadcasting with us. You're listening to the Victorian Country. We've also been doing a little drop-in at some other places around Stanley this afternoon and find out what is growing, because it's not just berries and cherries. There's also a new vineyard that has gone in. I think Peter Shamron mentioned it a bit earlier as well. It was a good place to grow wine grapes with an elevation of just over 800 metres above sea level. And it's also where a newly imported variety has been planted. Mark Walpole is from Fighting Gully Roan's Wine. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us up here at the berry farm. I know it's hard to get a park.
No, unbelievable the amount of people here.
Yeah. Stanley's never been so busy, eh?
I see plenty of cars driving past the vineyard, but I always wonder where they're going.
So tell us a bit about, this is your new vineyard out here in Stanley, because you have a vineyard already up in Beechworth, don't you?
Yes, so the original Fighting Gully Road vineyard is on Fighting Gully Road on the west and south part of Beechworth. So it's probably at an elevation of around about 550 metres, and I've always sort of been eyeing off country in Stanley to go that bit higher and that much cooler, so managed to convince a landowner to sell a bit of his land to me a few years back, and so last year we got to pretty quickly and we planted about 12 acres of Chardonnay Pinot and the Petit Arvin, so a Swiss variety.
So the Petit Arvin in particular, that's the one we spoke to earlier last year now, about importing that in from Europe. Can you remind us a bit about, I guess, the process that was?
Yes, look, the whole process actually did start 20 years ago when I first sort of came across the variety up in the Aosta Valley, right up in northwest Italy. I really, really liked the wine, so it's a dry table wine. And so, yeah, like I sort of started the process of trying to find material to bring in about 2015. And it took about 4 years really to get through, because it was a sort of a minor variety. There wasn't really any of it available in sort of the repository. So being a non-approved source, it took a long time to get in anyway. So I finally got it through, and we managed to propagate up a lot of the budwood very quickly and had enough to plant about 2 acres here in Stanley in November last year. So we trained them straight up to the wire straight away, and we've got a small crop on board for vintage 2026.
And you've brought along a bottle as well. Very handy on a Friday afternoon. But so this is the first sort of batch you've made.
Yes, so this is the first commercial release of the variety in Australia. We made some wine from the mother vines that are growing up in Mildura in 2024, but we had about 700 litres this year. So we bottled that a couple of weeks ago, and it'll be out in the market in the new year, so now.
Very exciting. So 20 years in the making, this bottle.
Pretty much.
Tell us a little bit about how the season's been up here in Stanley. I know it's been late for a lot of the fruit growers around here. Does that have an impact on the wine grapes as well?
Look, it has certainly been late right across Beechworth for wine grapes. The spring was very, very cool, so bud burst was a little bit later than normal, but the spring really was quite cold. So it has really sort of delayed the development of the vines. The flowering was later, and sort of the berry, the berry size growth has been slowed. So we sort of expecting that we might actually have a harvest about a week or 10 days perhaps later than normal.
And also understand there was some frost around Christmas as well.
Pretty amazing. People probably remember just how cold Christmas Day was. Those really cold southerlies came up, and yes, so the new TAFCO weather station in Stanley got down to 1.1 degrees, and we certainly had some light ground frost, so some young vines down sort of at grass level got a bit zapped.
I know Stanley is known for being cold. This is the place you usually check to see where it snows when we get those snow warnings saying, but that's not normal, is it, for December to get frost here?
No, look, I would have said that was extremely unusual. So, and certainly I wasn't expecting it at all. Look, we've certainly got a very well air drained site. That was one of the real beauties of the block we when we bought it. So I really was quite surprised. So I should have actually slashed the grass down a bit earlier.
And in terms of Stanley and growing wine grapes up here, you know, is it a good place to grow grapes, do you think?
Absolutely. As things warm up, there's no doubt. The vintages are advancing, and places, you know, are getting too warm for some varieties, and certainly things like Pinot Noir, we're finding it at our Fighting Gully Road vineyard that it's just ripening too early now. So the idea of really, I guess, planting Pinot Noir here is really to, you know, sort of push out the harvest date by at least 3 or 4 weeks, and hopefully we'll be picking it sort of in a cooler part of the year. Stanley, you know, being higher, cooler, you'll get much better acid retention in the grapes, so we'll have a better balance in the wine as well, less additions of acid needed. Yeah.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us here and having a chat and helping us celebrate Stanley a little bit and sort of the horticultural haven, I'm calling it at the moment, because you look around and you realise there is a lot of things growing out here.
Look, there's plenty of opportunity too, I think, so... you know, there's a few bare paddocks around that can still be planted with something. So, yes, thank you.
Thanks very much, Mark. That's Mark Walpole. He's from Fighting Gully Road's Wine, talking us through there his new vineyard that's been planted out here in Stanley. Also this afternoon, we've got to check in with one more farm up here in Stanley this afternoon. This morning I went up, I was doing a bit of a road trip, it seems like, on my way up here to the berry farm, and I dropped in at a few other places. And historically, you know, Stanley we know is an apple growing region, but let's head to someone considered maybe the new kids on the block, Black Barn Farm. They grow a range of things, including apples and berries, and they do regenerative farming techniques. And I called into there earlier this morning.
Well, I'm Charlie Showers, and with Jade, Miles and our kids, we run Black Barn Farm in Stanley.
Blackburn Farm is an organic and regenerative horticultural operation. So we do pick your own berries, currants, apples and pears, amongst a range of other things. We do we sell trees and berries in pots and also bare rooted over winter. We run a range of different workshops. We do flowers as well, which is new this year. We have an education component too, so we do a lot of school groups and adult education around homesteading and farming.
Oh, a big range of things happening here at Blackburn Farm. Jade and Charlie, I was just saying to you, Jade, it was about 4 or 5 years ago I last came out here and the barn wasn't here, and now we're in this big, beautiful barn at the moment. It's great to see. It's, yeah.
Yeah, it's come to fruition. Yeah, we milled the timber off the property for this barn, and we always knew that the barn would be the central piece and it would be where we would run the workshops and it would be where we would gather our community, really. And so they're coming from all over, and they're not just Stanley and Beechworth, but people come from all over for our workshops. Sometimes they're multi-day workshops or schools programs. They might come for a multiple-day camp. And so it really gives us the opportunity to year-round gather people, talk about the importance of understanding the landscape that we're sitting in and how it's holding us from an ecological perspective. And that really then plays out in the way we make all our farming decisions as well. So we do everything we can to grow as close to nature as we possibly can. So we don't add synthetic anythings, which means that the food that we're eating can be picked straight from the vine or straight from the cane or straight from the tree. And it really gives us an opportunity to talk to people. It looks a bit wild too, you'll notice. It doesn't look quite as manicured and immaculate as lots of people imagine orchards could and should look. Mm-hmm. And that's completely intentional. That allows us to enhance the range of biodiversity that's out there and life, essentially. So we feel like we've created a landscape that is filled to the brim with life. And sometimes that feels at odds with people's expectations, but once you explain to them that it's all done intentionally because it's actually the healthiest way an ecosystem can operate, it feels... or people settle with it. They feel much better about it. And it could be that they're also eating an apple cider donut at the same time and so they feel a bit better about it.
Yeah, we'll get to the donuts. This has got to be one of the best smelling farms, I said to you when I got out of the car. It's just the donut coming through. Charlie, tell us a bit about what's growing in the orchards at the moment. What's the season been like?
Slow. So, yeah, it's been a slow season. We had a very, very cold spring and early summer. We had our last frost on the 27th of December, and we've never had a frost that late before. And particularly in November was really cold, which the berries don't necessarily dislike. It just delays the season. So we're running probably 2 weeks behind where we normally would be. So there's lots of berries. They're just taking a little bit longer to ripen this year. But we're getting a lot of good heat at the moment, so things are definitely coming along. So at the moment we've got raspberries and currants ripe. We've got all of our brambleberries, so Sylvan and Marion, and all the thornless blackberries coming on as well. So we'll be in full production and full ripeness in the next few days as we get a good amount of heat.
And apples are only a week or two away. Maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah, the bulk of our apples really don't come in until the middle of February. Our early season apples, which we mostly use for processing here on farm, come in January, but the ones that the public start picking usually happens about mid-February.
A bit optimistic, Jay.
Well, I keep forgetting about the delay as well. I keep feeling like we're there. And they look pretty good out there, but Charlie's right. The ones that we pick first are the Lodies and Vistabellas and Gravenstein's, and they tend to be the ones that we dehydrate or stew.
The other really special thing about your farm is the amount of different apple varieties that you grow here. What are you up to at the moment?
We've got about 70 to 80 different varieties of apples. A huge variety, which for us is really important because it allows us to span the season. As Jade said, we've got some very early season varieties that ripen in January, right through to some very late season varieties that you could still be picking in June. And you can't do that with the conventional modern apples. So we have all of the Pink Ladies and Fuji and Gala. But in amongst that, we've got some other amazing heritage varieties from countries all over the globe, which are just incredible, and they offer such a different diversity of flavour and eating experience than just your boring supermarket apple. And I say to people, if you've only eaten an apple from the supermarket, then get up to Stanley and grab a fresh apple, because it's a completely different eating experience. Like, they are truly different. And apples are always seen as a pretty bland kind of commodity crop because they're always available in the supermarket. Whereas we're trying to introduce that sort of romanticism and intrigue back into apples, because there is such a massive variation in taste. Like, we have some that taste like a banana. We have one variety called winter banana that truly has the aftertaste of a lolly banana. And then we have some others that are more nutty, like Cox's Orange Pippin, which is, a lot of English people will be very familiar with it. It's a very nostalgic and deeply complex apple to eat. So really, eating apples can be as enjoyable and complex as tasting wine. Like, they really do reflect the terrain that they're growing on, the climate that they're growing on, and the varieties. The other thing for us too is disease resistance. We've got a lot of varieties that are inherently fungal resistant to black spot, which is the most common fungal disease, which a lot of the more commercial apples aren't resistant to it at all. So they require a huge amount of fungicide, even organic fungicides, which are better than commercial fungicides, but we still don't like to spray those that much at all. But some apples don't even require it at all. So, yeah, that's why we love the diversity. It's just more interesting and can be better to grow.
That said, Charlie has one category favourite, and doesn't matter who asks him or where we are, he always talks about the Prima, because it is just this bomb-proof, highly productive apple that requires almost no care.
The Prima, like, is that, how do you spell that?
Yeah, P-R-I-M-A. So Australians would know that as like as a fruit box thing that you drink out of. But no, it's an American bred apple, which was bred specifically for the organic industry because it is disease resistant. They just produce a lot of fruit. They produce them early in the season. They produce it in young, when the tree's young, so you don't have to wait 15 years for the tree to bear fruit. So we sell more Prima apples as a backyard apple tree than any other.
That's because you tell everyone to buy one.
And they're a beautiful eating apple. They're fantastic apples. So that's just an example of one of the many varieties that we've got here, both as potted trees to sell, but also as apples that you can eat throughout the season once they're ripe.
I love the way you guys talk about apples. I've never been so excited about trying different apples before. The other sort of different thing or thing that makes your farm a bit different is the diversity. I mean, we've talked about all the different things you grow here. Why is that important to you guys to have that diversity?
Especially as we're embarking on a changing climate, nothing's stable. And so we can't go out with one product or one tree crop and expect it to be bomb-proof year after year after year after year. And so the diverging climate is kind of forcing us to ensure that our business is also diverse. So we've planted it in different parts of the property. We've planted things on different rootstocks. We've planted things that blossom at different times, that harvest at different times, that required quite different growing conditions, which then means that if we're hit with hail or if we're hit with frost or if we're hit with a disease that is unexpected, we've got something else. We've got another leg to our milking stool. And I think, like, that's from a business perspective, but actually it's really important to us as a business that we connect and communicate and engage with our community in a way that they feel like they can get their hands dirty, they feel like they can go away with an experience that just fills their knowledge cup, but fills their heart and makes them feel like they've connected to a piece of landscape that they can access. It's not that common that people have family with properties anymore with the commodification of the farming sector. And so it's really important for us that this feels like a community enterprise. And as a result of that, we've got other people here doing things too. We've got someone else who runs the bees. We used to, and we were too stretched and we did a bad job of it, so someone else runs the bees. We've got someone else who runs the market garden. We have at times had someone else that runs the schools program. We may at some point have someone else that runs the flowers. And the thing with that is that it's not that we're creating an empire, it's that we're creating this sort of level playing field or a structure that allows other people an opportunity to learn and to grow and to connect in with a community that is connected, and that's not just the Jade and Charlie show, but that's everybody's ability to learn from it in a farming environment.
That's Jade Miles and Charlie Showers from Black Barn Farm. They're dropped in there earlier this morning. And that's an end to the Country Hour today and this Friday as well. Thanks for listening. It's been great being up here in Stanley. Thanks to Highgrove for having us. Thank you to Emma Field as well for all her production help this week. We'll be back Monday on the Country Hour. The cricket will be on, so we'll come back on at 12:35 during lunch, or you can listen to the whole program on the digital stream. So head to that. Get the ABC Listen app if you want to listen to the whole program. Otherwise, that's it for me. Have a great rest of the afternoon and a happy weekend. Talk to you Monday.